Hello, everybody, and welcome to Elm Town, episode 17. Today, we're going to be talking with Matthew Griffith. You want to say hi, Matt?
Hello.
All right, stop saying hi, because now I'm going to go on to the sponsors, and we are going to start out by mentioning our dear Day One, who is the company that I work for. We make a beautiful journaling and life archiving app for Mac and for iOS. Coming soon to other platforms, I believe we're just almost there with Android, so keep your eyes out, Android folks. And next is Daily Drip, a training service that makes keeping up to date on programming skills easy. Daily Drip provides small but powerful lessons to level you up in a number of topics, including Elm Elixir, CSS, and HTML. And after signing up, every weekday you'll get a short video about 5 minutes long or a reading delivered to your inbox. And yes, please show your support by signing up with Daily Drip, and there will be a coupon code in the show notes to save $9 on your first month. Last but not least, we have Futurists, which is a new breed of innovation consultancy with digital values at its core. They believe in happy people, happy customers, and happy users. They're users of Elm, they're community contributors, and they're innovators in the open source space. They are good people, and they do good work. They're wonderful people, so big thanks to them for sponsoring the show. And we want to send out big thank yous to our listeners, because podcast hosting is being provided by listeners like you. And that's where we're going to leave that for now. So thank you, dear listeners like you, who are providing podcast hosting. And then this episode has been produced by Fergus Meeklejohn, which I think I said his last name right this time. Fergus has been editing the shows, but for the first time, he also arranged this show for me. So I'm going to just go out on a limb here and say it was produced by Fergus, even though I didn't ask him if that was okay to do. So thanks, Fergus. Everybody give him a pat on the back. And with all the formalities out of the way, with no further ado, let's introduce for real Matthew Griffith.
Woo! Hello.
Who's returning to the show for his third or fourth episode,
I think. Third or fourth episode or something like that. I forget.
For those who haven't listened, why don't you just introduce yourself really quickly?
Yeah.
Still at Cornell?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my name is Matt Griffith, as you might have figured out. So I work at Cornell Tech. We're a kind of a new university associated with Cornell, but we're located in Manhattan. We actually have our new campus on Roosevelt Island. It's pretty cool. And I'm a developer in residence there. So what that means is I help faculty with their projects. And every now and then I get to work on open source Elm stuff.
That's cool. So you don't teach any courses or anything like that?
No. I generally help I'll help the PhD students with their projects and like help implement their stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And you also were an ElmConf speaker last year, and you spoke at Elm Europe this year.
Mm-hmm.
Typically you're kind of like the style guy, right?
Apparently like I kind of have like the word style has definitely appeared in multiple of my projects. Right. So my first talk, was on Elm style animation, that I made. And that was great. That's where I met you and all the other really cool Elm people. And then at Elm Europe, I got to talk about, my new project, which is called Style Elements,
which is what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
Just flash preview. And so you are not connected with the Elm CSS library, though.
No.
People get confused.
That's a good point to like kind of get started. So like Elm CSS really, you know, goes to be like a one-to-one representation of CSS in Elm, which is great. And there's like a whole host of benefits that you get there. And the goal of that project is to represent all the variants of CSS, right? So
and type safe.
Elm yeah, style. Make it type safe and nice and all that good stuff. So style elements is more, you know, let's take the problem of like layout and styling, and let's forget about HTML and CSS and say like, okay, how should we actually do this? There's kind of a whole history there. But at the moment, like where it kind of landed, and this is version 3, even though it's only been recently that it's been on people's radar, that version 3, the big thing was realizing that you can't do a lot of the stuff that you would want to do just by having a CSS library. You can't innovate beyond a certain point if you're just generating CSS. You have to also kind of have control over the HTML, like the DOM.
Ooh, that's tantalizing. Wait, pause. Okay. I want to make a little cliffhanger so that people will stick around as we go into the questions, because we want to address those quickly and then come back to the meat of the conversation.
Yeah.
So I asked on Twitter for listener questions, and I got one. So thank you very much to, let me see who it is, to Benjamin Bowles for asking a question. And Benjamin asks, will Elm support WebAssembly? Also, will there be support for JS and WASM at the same time? And those are great questions. And I want to say in response that I think we intend to do a whole episode on this topic. Whether or not there will be support in the near future, I think it would be good to talk to Evan or whomever is thinking about those things right now about maybe what future possibilities could be or what the difficulties are there. So I'm not promising an episode in the future, but I am saying in answer to that, I would like to address it with an episode, and we want to see if that's a possibility. So there's the answer to the one question. But if you are a listener and you have a question that we can answer on the air, please go ahead and use the Google form that I put on Twitter that's also available on the Elmtown podcast website, which is elmtown.github.io. You can go to any episode, or you can go to the contact page there, and then at the bottom there's a link to the Google form. I mean, it's not a very good website. I meant to apologize for that. But okay, back to you, Matt. Yeah. Before we move along, I just wanted to mention that we've made jokes in the past about style and like Gucci shoes and things like that. Uh-huh. But for real, I watched your talk today from Elm Europe, and you got style. I mean,
thank you.
You got nice clothes. Your shirt's very nice. Your hairdo's excellent. So I want to tell the listeners they should trust you, because style-wise, this guy's got it. All right?
Well, one thing that I was like, I noticed after the fact, and is that actually the shirt I'm wearing actually matches the color that I used for like my slides, which
oh really?
Yeah, I'm like, oh my god, I match my slides. Like
it wasn't even intentional.
I'm like, oh boy,
so good that you're matching subliminally. That's incredible.
I know, right?
Way to go! Yeah. All right. So now that we trust you and your style sense, let's talk about the specifics of the library. Now, I watched just recently the talk that you gave at Elm Europe, mm-hmm. and it was pretty neat because you talked at the beginning about how the current problem with CSS and HTML is that they are like they're inseparable, mm-hmm. But also duplicated. So the work you have to do for layout has to happen in both CSS and HTML.
Right.
But you have to track them in both places, but they really can't be separated, or else you've got crazy bugs. Is that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, like the way I like to think about it, you know, in Elm we have, you know, or it's not just Elm, it's a lot of languages, but there's this idea of like side effects, right? Which is essentially something happens to the outside world or outside kind of a domain that's not really expected. So a lot of CSS properties sort of have that as their main function. The defaults have this as their main function. And so what I mean by that is like you'll have a CSS property on an element, and what that property does or what aspect of what that property does really depends on the context around it. So kind of a very basic one that I always go into, and I think it's fascinating because it's the default, is position static. So position static, you know, which everything is position static when it starts out. And you might think like, okay, well, that's fine. So what does position static do? Well, it makes it so that width and height can't be set. And also it makes it so that if a child element has position absolute, and position absolute meaning like position me by my parent, right, is what that means.
Right.
Position static will make it skip that level, right? So like you'll have the child and the child is like saying like, I want to be positioned by like relative to my parent, you know? And then the parent is saying like, oh, that's not me. That's that. Keep going up.
All right. So it redirects the request up to an ancestor.
Right. So, it's like, okay, well, one, it was kind of a burning question. It's like, does anybody actually use that as a feature? Right. This skipping mechanism. And like I wrote this whole piece of code to like scrape styles and stuff, and like,
oh really?
Like, yeah.
That's cool.
I'm really kind of in love with the idea of like, if you can do science, you know, with your code, you should to get real answers.
So this is research based, evidence based API design,
right? And I was like, okay, like, and really what I'm looking for is like a compelling use case. Like, and the compelling use case didn't show up. In fact, nobody used it for that purpose. Like I could actually test, you know, like, are there any like position statics that are using, like that have a child that are position absolute? And then like you could detect that it was having an effect in some sort of way. And it literally never happened. So I'm like, okay, well, that's great. That's only, you know, the default.
Right. Yeah, right.
Right. It's like, that's the default behavior. So like there's already, and then I was really looking at it. I was like, okay, well, you have like all these properties that have those weird effects, right? That depend on the hierarchy and the context. And it kind of occurred to me like, well, no wonder we can't just like move things around, you know, like you take off a Lego and you put it somewhere else. Like, no wonder we can't do that. Because like the Lego has like tendrils, right? And it's like, right. And it's like changing shape as you move it. And,
really funny. I like it.
Yeah. So that was like, that's why it's like those things can't, be like separated. And, yes. It's interesting to think even just like the concept of layout, like if we ignore HTML and CSS, like the concept of layout in a lot of ways as a concept is this kind of like, it's hierarchical already sort of. So like having it not being defined in a hierarchy is actually kind of weird, because it's like, it's, I don't know if those things just as concepts can be really nicely separated. I think you can do a lot of things to make them nicer to be separated, but you know.
So what we're saying here, in another way of saying it, if I'm correct, is that we know that any number of assumptions that we make in code are also possibly introduced bugs, right? I mean, that's mm-hmm. kind of yeah. the Elm way of thinking of things. And that's why the compiler is pure and exhaustive and right. It's got good error messages, is because what they want to say is unless you are checked by a machine, you're making assumptions, and those assumptions, humans are bad at keeping those assumptions valid, right?
Right.
And that's what CSS is all about, is assumptions. Because anytime you're doing anything but saying like, all of my buttons are red, you're assuming something about the structure of the content that you are
right.
modifying the CSS. Is that correct?
Yeah. You know? So that was kind of like the first problem. I mean, so this actually all started to go back way back when, is like, I just had this idea of like, you know, style. And I think a lot of people have had this idea. Like why is style so hard, and why can't we in Elm, why can't we have something that's, you know, not that hard?
Yeah, we that's can't like have really nice things.
Yeah, like why can't we have nice things?
Yeah, yes, good.
And and I just kept thinking like, why can't we have like styles that are just as like refactorable and nice and not error prone as like normal Elm code is? And it turns out to like not be enough to just put it behind some types. You have to go out and you essentially have to have an effect manager for this stuff, which is like, you know, your border guard.
So did you actually do that? Is there an effect manager for this?
I mean,
style
not in the traditional sense, not in the like, oh, this has JavaScript running. But like conceptually, that's what I think about. Like it will only create certain HTML. It will use certain HTML constructs to make things predictable. Right. So in my mind, that's kind of, it's kind of the role of an effect manager, right? Is like this barrier that prevents you from shooting yourself in the foot.
Okay. Yes. Right.
Even though technically, you know, all the other effect managers are like talking to the outside and stuff. So this is sort of talking to the outside still.
So that makes sense. I realize that both you and I are somewhat familiar with the API, and many listeners may not be. So essentially what this library is doing then is it's giving you a higher level DSL for layout. Is that correct?
Yeah. So,
DSL being domain specific language.
Totally.
So you're not working with divs and spans and stuff anymore.
So yeah, absolutely. So, here's, for some flavor, and I kind of go into more depth in my, talk at Elmira, but, you know, how this thing is put together is like, okay, well, if we say that, you know, layout as a concept, like laying out a page, you know, not necessarily like laying out like a single like set of three things or whatever, but laying out your entire page. If we buy that should be a single high level concern, and that it can't be removed from your hierarchy, then it sort of has to follow that your layout should be defined. It should be the primary concern of your view. It shouldn't be kind of stuffed away in like the bag of attributes that CSS kind of allows you or makes you do. So what this kind of looks like, and this actually goes, and I'm kind of paraphrasing my talk right here, but it goes into like kind of the insight that I had of, you know, what's an error in style or layout. And you kind of, it's kind of an issue because there's not like, oh, I got this weird error message. There's no error message. It's just like you feel bad and you want to go home, right? It's like the error is in your heart. It's right, like, oh, so that's actually enough of a definition to be something we can work with. So we can say like, okay, well, generally if things are like moving or doing something that we didn't expect, that hurts my heart, right? Like feel bad. I don't want to be a developer. You know, or
everyone hates CSS.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we say that the majority of this stuff actually, like, of these errors, these like soul crushing errors, have to do with layout, because like, you know, you see a color that's wrong, you know, you can fix that. You just change the color. But if you have a layout that's wrong, it's much more devious. It's like,
right,
okay,
because it may be that destroy other things.
Yeah, and you have all these properties that are fighting with each other.
Right.
So, I mean, a very classic example is padding and margin. It may seem very natural to have both of those, but like if you have like a spacing issue that you've encountered, like, oh man, you know, this is not spaced correctly, you immediately have this question. It's like, well, is it the padding of the parent or is it the margin of the child? And it's like, that's not a hard question, but like there are so many like things like that that are fighting with each other in that. So anyway, I don't want to get too far afield. What this actual library looks like is like, okay, if we know that layout is hard to do by separating it, and we know that layout is the cause of a lot of our pain because of that, that means that layout needs to be the primary concern of our view. And so we're going to actually create a new kind of vocabulary of what these elements will be. And we will enforce that these layouts will always have an explicit layout. So the very first thing you'd have is you'd have your classic things of text and empty. And so that's great. It's like you have a nothing and you have, you know, some text. Fantastic. Now, your next step, which normally in HTML would be like, okay, you have a div, right? You know, kind of a meaningless thing, has some attributes and some children. But what I kind of realized is actually a div, like if we buy into that idea, like layout needs to be explicit, the div has multiple children. Well, that's an error state. It's actually, I like to think of it, and I mentioned this in the talk as well. I like to think of that as like the undefined is not a function sort of thing.
Right.
Is a div that has multiple children, and that's such a basic thing, but there's no contract for layout. So how can we get around that? Because we need to be able to specify a single thing. And I like how I approach that is like, well, if we had a div, essentially a div that had exactly one child, that's great because we know exactly where that child is, right?
Right.
There's a very strong contract of layout. So that's what an L is, short for element, if you couldn't guess.
Okay.
And then it's like, okay, well, that's great. Well, how do we build this up? Well, let's say we want multiple children. Well, that's fantastic. We just have to specify how they're arranged. So we have a row, you know, we have a column, there's a grid. It's like, okay, well, that's not quite enough to actually describe all of our layouts. So like if we have a row of things, let's say if we have a row of three things, we need to be able to kind of describe some properties for those things inside of there. So so you have, you know, three boxes in this row. Now you want to kind of space them. And so that brings us immediately to one of our new properties, which is called spacing, which is actually one of my favorite properties just because it's so nice. And spacing, conceptually, it is a property that goes on the parent. And we say like spacing 10. And that means that the spacing between all of the children is 10 pixels. That's such a nice way to think about stuff.
So much better than having to go select children and set the spacing by hand and margin or padding.
Exactly. And what's interesting is there's actually a little bit of kind of like kung fu jujitsu that you have to do to make spacing work with the parent padding as well. So in the library, I said padding and margin are kind of like always fighting with each other, right? So we had to pick one. So I picked padding for some very specific reasons. If you pick padding, that means that an element can't like affect the layout of elements next to it. Right.
Okay.
Because margin could. Right. And so it's like, okay, it can only affect itself. So all of a sudden we have this idea and we're always kind of moving inwards. So if we picked padding and we have this idea of spacing, which is essentially the space between things in a layout, you have this nice thing where it's like you have the parent, which has some padding, and then you have like the spacing between things. And those two like concepts together are just really nice for making this basic layout. But you have to actually do some weird HTML stuff to get that to work. You have to have an intermediate div with negative margin to basically make, because like how spacing works behind the scenes is it sets the margin of the children, right? But there's an issue, right? If you set the margin of the children, you have this extra space between the like outside of the parent and the children, right? And so it's like, okay, well, that's not, that violates the idea of spacing here. that's part of the padding. Yeah, so that's like a prime example of like, okay, look, here's a very specific, really nice concept of layout that you can't get without having a weird HTML structure.
So the library does that stuff automatically for you. It takes care of inserting the style and the HTML and keeps them in sync, which is incredible.
Right. And what's interesting is I found that, so CSS is enormous. It's as a language, it's huge. I actually wanted to like, and maybe someone can do this. If they do this, I will buy you a beer. But it's like, if someone can like plot how many just words and concepts there are in CSS compared to like how many words and concepts in the, like the core Elm library or even core JS, and CSS is going to be just massively bigger. At least that's my intuition. There's just so many weird concepts, so many weird words. But what I found is that actually like the words you need for layout, you don't need a huge number of them. you know, there's like width and height. That's great. There's, you know, row, column, that sort of stuff. There's grid. That's great. And there's this L construct, which is like a thing that, you know, has one child. That's cool. And then you have these attributes. You have like, okay, you know, we'll have spacing. So spacing is the spacing between stuff. You'll have alignment. Alignment is interesting because it fractures across everything in CSS. So alignment, another way to say it is in this library, alignment actually covers a lot of different concepts, but covers it very nicely. So alignment is like, you know, align left or center or align right or vertical align or bottom align, right? Like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, you know, for that concept, which I just mentioned, right, I didn't need to explain it because humans understand that. Like you could, like I can talk to my girlfriend and I can say, hey, you know, what if this thing was aligned right? And she'd know what I was talking about, right?
Makes sense.
Yeah. But that concept has been redone in a bunch of different ways. So align right in a Flexbox thing is like align items. But it's actually not just align items. There is like also align content, I believe.
I think it's justify content.
Justify content.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense to me actually as a word. There's a lot of words that in CSS I have a hard time thinking about because they're so vague to me. Like an example would be like position, absolute position relative.
Right.
Those things mean nothing. You could like if in the grand scheme of things, you could switch them and or position fixed even. All the positions, you could switch them and you could relearn it and be like, oh yeah, that would be the way, right? Like, you know, position relative to what? The screen. Well, that's position right. Fixed. Well, position fixed. Oh, that's, you know, that's relative to the parent. Even talking about it, it's hard.
It's, you know, naming things is the number one hardest thing in computer science. Isn't that what it was?
Yeah.
And cache invalidation.
Right. Yeah. Right. So anyway, sorry. So alignment, it's like, okay, you know, if we say align left, we expect what that would mean. And align right, we expect what that would mean. And so in Flexbox, we have a certain way of talking about it. And grid is similar. It's got some of those like justify content, align items, whatever. But what's interesting is what about like a text layout? And text layout is what I like to call. It's a special type of layout in this library. It's roughly analogous to block layout. But essentially, if you had like a div in there and you align left with that, or, you know, an element, let's use the new terminology, and you align left, it would, the concept is actually float left, right?
Yeah, right.
And it's like, it kind of like begs the question, like, what is, what is intuitive, right? And like intuitive, I've kind of found is you define these different contexts, and you know you have a similar vocabulary that acts differently, but obviously, right?
Yeah.
And so anyway, I mean, I think I've covered. I mean, I might have to look it up, but there might be like one or two concepts more, but like those concepts will get you most of the way.
That makes a lot of sense. I have a couple questions too related to this. So the first one, maybe we should just do like a quick yes or no on this one, but you also have tools for specifying visual style and not layout. Is that correct? As separate from layout.
Yeah, that's true.
Color and font size and things like that, I assume. Okay. And then we can come back to that in just a minute. Yeah. The other two questions that I have here are, what is the browser support for the implementations that you use CSS side?
That's a great question. If you go to the actual GitHub and look at the issues, I have an open issue that says help wanted quantifying browser support.
Okay. Yeah. But I mean, in general, you're using Flexbox, you're using CSS Grid.
Yep. So Flexbox, CSS Grid. Okay. So Grid is probably the craziest thing that's in there, but I was actually surprised how supported it is.
It is.
Like if you check it out.
It's pretty supported on newest browsers.
I think I use pointer events, but I think that's pretty supported. I basically, it's hard for me to answer directly. I really would love to actually sit down and get, I want to get one box that I can say like, look, if you're using this, you know, here's the table of support that you can expect.
That would be awesome.
It'd be very cool. It's a surprising amount of work. I mean, the resources are there. You can use the can I use data set or whatever, but.
But for right now, you know that if you're going to use, at least if you're going to use Grid in Elm style, you got to have something that supports CSS Grid or Flexbox.
Yeah.
Or both.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are the prime. Flexbox is used extensively. You probably can't, if you need to target a browser that doesn't use Flexbox or can't use it or whatever, then this library probably, it's not the time to use it. And with CSS Grid, it's only used on the Grid elements. So, you know,
if you don't use Grid, then you're not going to need Grid.
Then you're probably okay. And I don't think there are, you know, a lot of this library was actually just eliminating a lot of stuff. Like there are certain constructs that you just can't make because I was like, okay, well, what's the actual value? Like if the foundation was fixed, would you actually need this? I think the compatibility is actually pretty nice, except for maybe Grid, but,
okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And then the next question is, are you using this on projects? And if so, have you run into situations yet where you just haven't been able to express what you've wanted to express using this library?
You know, I am using this for sure. And I'm constant. Oh, another thing to kind of mention is like, if you decide to use this, please join the Style Elements Slack. I am very active there. I answer questions. It's great. I get so much feedback. What I have found is there's been nothing that has been, as far as I remember, I'm trying to think right now. I can't think of anything. That's been like, you can't express it. Some of this has been just a journey of finding really interesting nuances of CSS, which is great, actually. Like, I kind of think about this as, you know, when someone comes to me, like, there are a certain number of issues that I'm hoping to resolve pretty quick here that are, like, just, like, kind of surprising effects even for the, like, for this library. But kind of the mentality I have is, like, you know, with Elm, you know, people report runtime errors. Those happen. But, you know, there are a few people who know, like, all of them. Right. And then once they're fixed, they're sort of always fixed. Right.
Right.
And so for the errors that have shown up, it's like, okay, this is awesome. This is great because I can go in and I can resolve this and then I can never think about this again.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Let's take a second and talk about the style and layout interaction. Okay. How does that work out? How do you separate style from layout?
Okay, so if we had the primary idea of layout, right, and it lives in the view, we still need to be able to style things. And so my thinking was like, okay, well, let's have a style sheet, but it can't have layout properties. It can be everything but layout properties. And that's kind of what exists here, right? So the style sheet is actually drastically reduced from what you would normally write. I got rid of essentially the idea of a CSS selector, because I found that one of the issues that I've encountered, and I think a lot of people have encountered with CSS in general, is that selectors, you know, they're great to start out with. At least they seem to be great, but like, it's really easy to get into just bizarre little areas where you have these unintentional side effects. So like, if your selector isn't like nicely fit to your situation. So I'm like, okay, well, how can we resolve this? Well, we can say, and there are like a lot of other things beyond selectors. There's also the idea of like combining classes, right? So you, in HTML, if you like list a few classes, they'll combine in a certain way. That's actually immediately unintuitive, because it combines in source order of the CSS, not in the order you're positioning them.
Right. Yes.
And I haven't encountered anybody who thought that was a good idea. I mean, you can kind of see, it's like, okay, well, that, I don't know. I don't even want to go there. So anyway, so there's a lot of these really subtle interactions, to the point where, you know, we have huge resources developed specifically for like learning how to organize and construct your CSS.
Like the BIM methodology.
Yeah, like BIM or inverted triangle, or like, and you know, it's nothing against the people that are making these things. Like, these resources they're necessary, right? But what if we didn't need them? what if you didn't need to, like, you know, read a book about CSS and learn not only how it functions, but the best way to write it, and like all of the, you know, oh, there's a cliff over there and there's a troll over here type, you know, messaging or like, you know, signposts that you need. Like, oh, I shouldn't do it this way because this will hurt later.
That would be nice.
Yeah, it would be great. So I was just trying to find, like, you know, does it actually make sense to essentially map properties based on a selector over other stuff? I'm like, I don't think it is.
So if you don't have a selector, then you just apply style to one specific element?
Yeah, essentially you do still have this like bag of single styles. So it's a very flat style sheet, right? And every element in your layout can have exactly one of these styles. And we kind of think like, okay, why did we have the style sheet in the first place? It's like, well, we really wanted to avoid replication of code. But if you think about it, actually, and I can't back this up with like numbers like I can for other stuff, but I feel that it's probably true. The amount of times you reuse styles, I don't think it's a huge amount. So it's sort of, I kind of view it as like a premature optimization to say like, look, all of our styles are going to be super reusable.
You also complicate the styles then and introduce potential bugs if you change
right.
something.
And if you already have, like in normal CSS, if you already have these weird like properties that kind of like insert their tendrils into, because they're like built in the, you know, they're for a specific context. It's like, oh, this is the logo, but it's for this specific like instance of the logo. It's easy to go crazy. So it was essentially like one style per element. And I've really kind of like been thinking about this for like, okay, is the unit of like deduplication for styles, is it actually a class? Like, is it actually like a single fully formed style? Like, even with the separation of layout and other stuff, like all the other stuff. What you really want is you want this like really nice like design system that you can pull from and used to build very nicely stuff very easily, right?
Yeah.
And I found like my thought is that actually exists more on the value level. You know, like you have a collection of colors,
right?
And you have a collection of fonts, and you have a collection of font sizes, and you can use functions to actually relate those. So, like, I think my other favorite function in this library beyond spacing is the modular scale, right? So this is something that designers use a lot, and it makes a ton of sense, which is basically a modular scale. Is like, look, you know, if you use this generally for font sizes, but you can use it for any kind of like, you know, physical length or whatever. You say like, look, starting at like 20 pixels, I want like the normal size to be 20 pixels. And if I go up a level, it's 20 pixels times a ratio, like 20 times 1.3. And if I go up another level, it's like 20 times 1.3 times 1.3, right?
Right.
And then if you go down, you go the other way. So it keeps everything like in alignment. So all of a sudden you can have this function that is really nice for keeping everything in sync. And it's like, well, that's incredibly useful for this deduplication of stuff and capturing the design logic of what's going on. Right.
So that function that you just mentioned, then I guess I need a little bit more perspective on how you end up with just one style per element. Then are there mix-ins that where you can, or do you call a function to compose a single style from other styles?
There's not mix-ins. And this is something I'm actively kind of thinking about, but so this may change kind of in the future. But essentially you just like list out your properties, though you could essentially use a function. So you could use a function to grab a value, right? So you could say like, you know, font size, you know, font.size. And then the argument is like scale one. And scale one is a function you defined earlier, which is like your font scale. Right.
Okay.
And so, so that in that kind of way, you're actually mimicking the REM unit, REM.
Right.
But yeah, so it's interesting what, like how you compose these things. I think if you capture your values very nicely, it becomes pretty easy to just, you know, write out the exact style you want. You know, you go to your color palette and you're like, look, this is the, you know, brand primary, whatever, like light color. So that's basically it. So you have this flat style sheet that then you can like apply to your stuff. And I will say, actually, we are like, I'm currently kind of exploring like inline style definitions.
Okay.
So the idea here would be like getting rid of the style sheet completely, but having essentially a style sheet being rendered kind of in the background, so you almost have like this, you know, virtual DOM but for your style sheet, right?
No, okay, yeah, interesting.
So in that case, you don't need to keep like, because I was even thinking like, okay, why do we have this separation in the first place? It's like, well, we have this separation because of this idea of like deduplication and reusability. It's like, well, but if we're not seeing that's really like, are there huge productivity gains there? Then maybe there's a different way to do like, you know, reusability. And maybe has to do with functions, and maybe it has to do with there. You know, there was a concept actually earlier in the library that, when I made a pretty kind of big pivot, kind of left, but it may come back in, which is like, so mix-ins are really interesting, but I was really hesitant to use them or to put them in the library. And the reason why is because you can still like get unintended effects if you don't organize like your mixable styles correctly.
Yeah.
So there are really nice ways to organize stuff. So if you have a mix-in that, like a set of mix-ins that just deal with color, that's great, right?
Right.
Because it's like, oh, this is the color palette. I want this color palette. Fantastic. Like, but as soon as you kind of intersperse other stuff, it's like, well, this is the color and font size mix-in.
Sure, right.
You know, and it's like, well, that seemed like a good idea at the time, but I don't remember why. And so that's why I was kind of like hesitant for mix-ins. But the idea previously was that actually there would be categorized mix-ins. So like if you did color.mix, you could actually only bring in color attributes.
Okay, that's interesting.
And if you had font.mix, you could only bring in font attributes. So you had this, you knew by looking, like instead of like looking at a definition and you'd see like, oh, mix in one, mix in two, and you probably have better names for this, right? And some of this is enforced at the name level, like just by human recognition, but you could go one further of like, oh, I know for sure that like this is only bringing in colors and this is only bringing in fonts, which I thought was kind of like a cool concept. That was actually like the primary concept before I realized that layout was the bigger fish to fry.
So the mix-in got taken out then, the mix-in idea.
That categorized mix-in things. And I was like, well, I'm not going to include just a generic mix-in because if I do, people will use it.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But like, but maybe I'll just wait and find like what is the actual better solution.
Which is kind of the Elm way of doing it.
I know, right? Like, yeah. Teresa made a comment. Teresa's the author of Elm Plot.
That's right.
And she gave a talk at Elm Europe, which I really liked. And she made a comment like, if Elm was the community that, you know, was the community known for taking their time to do it right, like that would be the community I want to be a part of. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's definitely how I feel.
I just want to be part of that community after it's been going for a while.
Yeah.
So I have all the things.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we want the things too, right? But the payoff is pretty big. It's pretty nice.
So then what you're doing right now is compiling out to a spreadsheet. So I have to have like a Webpack plugin to make this work, or is there a builder?
No, so it'll embed a style sheet directly in there. There's
into
no
the HTML.
In the HTML, okay. Which is how Elm CSS will do it as well.
Okay.
So you can just get started. You know, you can, you know, start up Ellie and make a thing, which is great. If you don't know Ellie, you should use Ellie. It's awesome.
Ellie is
the
awesome.
Online code editor by Luke, who is awesome.
Luke Busby.
So yeah, you can just start using it. There is a tool that that Oliver just submitted, which is essentially like you're able to render style sheets like outside, you know, like this Elm CSS tool where it's like, okay, you know, render this as a file, right?
And then you could thumbprint it and shove it out to a CD.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want with that. I haven't merged that yet, but that's definitely going to be added.
Okay, so right now there's just some singleton style tag at the top that gets changed around and compiled.
Essentially, big style like declaration.
And I don't have to worry about sticking that in anywhere. I just use the library, and it takes care of that.
Yeah.
For me.
It'll make sure you can't render it without a style sheet. So, well, technically you could, but you'd have to use some other machinery. Your standard way is just it's gonna be fine.
Well, this is incredibly cool, Matt. We're running close to the end of the time, so are there any other selling points or exciting things that you want to?
Yeah, I think it might be a natural time to talk about like kind of what I plan with this library.
Oh, right, that was something I wanted to ask anyway.
Oh,
so
perfect.
Thanks for bringing that up.
This is like what's on my mind. It's not necessarily exactly how it's going to unfold, and I can't really give timelines, unfortunately, but. I mean, I have a timeline in my head, and it's not like super crazy, but
so easy to give timelines.
I know it's all here's a date. Oh man, that felt good. now I got to do it. So the thing that I'm working on right now, and this would be the first thing is like, okay, if it compiles, you'll have no mysterious like layout breakages. Like that was the first selling point. Actually, Brian Hicks mentioned if it compiles, it styles.
And ooh,
yeah,
that's good.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. But coming up, I realized that there's a lot of other stuff after, like, sort of, you know, the fact that this sort of replaces the standard HTML library. It's built on top of it, and it can interop with it on a certain level. But the next thing I was like, okay, well, what other guarantee would we have? And the guarantee I'm looking at right now is around form elements, which is around accessibility. Like, what if you had a library that, you know, if you just put together the forms in the obvious way, they would be accessible by default.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. That would be huge. That would be huge for me.
Excited.
And some of that's kind of hard. Like, colors are especially kind of hard. They may be hard to like type check. But definitely a lot of the other stuff should be, you know, correct annotation, proper HTML structure. That kind of stuff is definitely more in this area. So that's very cool.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
As I also mentioned, I think that there is potentially some really big gains around inline style definitions, and that's sort of what I'm considering after the form elements. That will be more of a developer productivity boost than a specific guarantee.
Right.
But yeah. And there's other stuff, obviously too, but be nice to say like, oh, put everything in there. But no, that's not how this, that's not how it'll necessarily work. So probably we'll do the form elements, see how this feels, see if the inline style stuff makes sense, you know, and go from there.
Well, brilliant. I love it. I love it. I'd give you a hint of applause, but it's a podcast, and that might be a little
loud. I appreciate it. I appreciate you saying that. That's great.
Here's my mouth of applause. You got it.
Oh, that's great. That's a little weird, but it's fine.
Yep. Okay. So do you have any picks, Matt?
Oh, man. You know, I do have a pick because I knew you were going to ask me this before on the podcast. I'm like, Murphy, like I forgot until you asked me, and then I'd be like, oh, man, sherbet ice cream, and you'd be like, what? So my pick is the album that I was listening to while I wrote a lot of this library, and that's an album called We Like It Here by Snarky Puppy. It's not on Spotify, unfortunately, but you can find it on YouTube. It's just crazy. It's
cool.
Yeah, I love it. It's very interesting music.
Sounds kind of hipster if it's not.
It's kind of hipster, sure. I mean, they're. I can't even. Go check it out. If you like it, that's great. If not, sure. whatever.
Like if you're talking to hipsters and you say, oh yeah, like that the Snarky Puppy album, are they gonna be like, oh dude, you're awesome, or are they gonna be like, it's too mainstream for us?
I think that it's funny because they're not like crazy pop, like they're not like immensely popular, but in a certain realm they're incredibly popular, right?
All right,
so they may be like, oh man, so over that. It's like
maybe you're hanging with the wrong group of friends if they're already over Snarky Puppy.
Yeah.
How can you get over a puppy? I love it, Matt. Okay, good. I mean, I don't know if I love it because I haven't listened to it, but I'm glad you love it.
Yeah, thank you.
And I'm going to mention my one pick, which is actually the Language Scala. And I might get some flack for this, but I like it. I've heard from people who really like it, and I've heard from people who adamantly dislike it and think that the language designer was nuts when he designed it. But I've been learning it because I've been doing a lot more server work lately, and I really like it. I think it's a nice mix between the functional and object oriented worlds, and there's a lot of good stuff to be discovered there. So I'm going to actually pick all of the books, basically all of the books on Scala by underscore.io. And they're all free. So underscore.io is a company that does Scala training, and they charge oodles and oodles of money for online training sessions, for corporate online training sessions and in person. And so they decided to make their books free. And I've been reading them, and they're excellent ways to learn the Scala language and to learn the Play framework and to learn the database. They have a database wrapper. And here's something cool, too. There's a functional database wrapper called Slick. And this is the first time I'd ever heard of a functional database wrapper that's like a functional version of an ORM.
Okay.
It's super cool. They've designed this library to work so that by using your normal functional constructs, map, filter, flat map, for example, they generate efficient SQL queries behind the scenes from those functional constructs. So you treat the database as an immutable collection. You filter it, you map over it, and then you can call update, and it generates a SQL query. And it basically, it treats it like, and then it generates a future. So it's a somewhat asynchronous. It's based on, never mind, I'm not going to go into those details. But I was very impressed when I was reading about it for the first time. And there's a book on that called Essential Slick 3 from Underscore. And wow, super cool stuff. Good way to learn. So all you Scala haters, please don't send me email and tell me that I'm a horrible person just because I like it. But I guess, you know, if you, it's a free world. So go ahead and do that if you want. I'll just cry. There we go. Aww. That's it. Let's end the show on that sad note. I'm just kidding.
No.
That's what I got.
Yep. No, it's good. Matt? It's good.
Okay, great. Have you ever used Scala?
I haven't.
Some neat stuff there.
Cool.
I like it. All right. Well, until next time, friends. Enjoy.
Until next time. Thank you, Murphy.
Thanks.